with the words inscribed on the headstone. Bruce Yen, rest in peace. 1958 to 2020. Bruce Yen, her father, who died in a freak car accident on his way back from Vegas 3 months ago. While Olivia had been cavorting around San Francisco, making love to Sammy and fretting over her job, her father had been only 200 miles away, dying. It was weird. She didn't know the man. Didn't even remember what he looked like. Other than shared genetic material, they were strangers. And yet, Olivia felt a deep, abiding sorrow. Not for the man himself, but for what could have been. The father who'd never taught her how to ride a bike and would never walk her down the aisle at her wedding. The parent who could have been a counterweight to Eleanor's viciousness, but who'd chosen to run instead, too daunted by the demands of marriage and fatherhood to stick around. Alina stared at the tombstone, her face pale. This whole situation feels surreal. Olivia couldn't agree more. She called her sister the day she cut ties with Eleanor, and they'd had a long, hard conversation that lasted hours. Lots of tears, anger, and angst. Alina admitted that she'd confronted Richard about him hitting on Olivia, and he hadn't denied it. Apparently, he'd thought she wouldn't break off the wedding for all the reasons she'd given Olivia, so he'd barely apologized. That, plus Olivia's words before she'd hung up on their last call, had been the last straw. Alina had called it quits. Richard had flipped out, and Eleanor had flown straight to California to lambast her younger daughter, even though breaking the engagement was Alina's decision. When Olivia told her sister what happened with their mother, including when she'd asked Eleanor to leave, not just her apartment, but her life, Alina had been stunned into silence. But she'd understood. For the first time in forever, she'd understood why Olivia did what she did, and she supported it. Alina's own relationship with Eleanor had been strained since she'd called off the wedding. They weren't estranged, but they hadn't spoken in weeks. From what Olivia could tell, Alina was in no hurry to resume communication with Eleanor, who'd withdrawn into icy silence to regroup after the Chicago Society papers exploded with news about Richard Barons III's broken engagement. It's ironic, Alina brushed her fingers over the smooth stone. If it hadn't been for the wedding, I wouldn't have tried to look for our father. But neither endeavor turned out the way I'd expected. No wedding, but a funeral. Her mouth twisted. Ironic, she repeated. Olivia's breath puffed in the cold air. During the call, Alina had let her in on a secret. She'd hired a private investigator to track down their father's whereabouts so she could invite him to her wedding. It was sentimental, dramatic, and wholly unlike Alina. But at the end of the day, every girl wanted to dance with her father and have him walk her down the aisle on her big day. Eleanor hadn't suspected a thing, and the PI had run into brick wall after brick wall until he finally tracked Bruce down to a small town in northwestern Nevada through police reports about the car crash. A truck ran a red light and slammed into the driver's side of Bruce's car. He'd been dead on impact. According to the PI, Bruce had moved dozens of times over the years, going from odd job to odd job, most of it paid under the table, to avoid creditors after he'd lost all his money gambling. He'd never remarried or had children after leaving Eleanor, and his car had been registered under a fake name. Ditto for his lease, though the landlord was so sketchy it was a surprise there'd been paperwork at all. Bruce had lived a sad, lonely life before his demise. And while a tiny, shameful part of Olivia thought he deserved it for walking away from his family, a larger part of her mourned the man he'd once been. Eleanor, in a rare slip-up, once told her and Alina that their father had aspired to be a poet. He'd wooed her with his beautiful words and romantic visions of the future, and she'd married him despite the voice in her head telling her it was a bad idea. She'd been right. When Bruce's poet dreams hadn't panned out, he turned to gambling for solace and left Eleanor to raise two daughters on her own. Perhaps it had been that fleeting glimpse of humanity that compelled Olivia to cling on to hope for her mother for so long. It blinded her to the reality that whatever light had once existed in Eleanor's soul had been snuffed out long ago. For that, Olivia empathized with the woman who'd raised her, mourned her the same way she'd mourned her dead father, even though Eleanor was alive and well. But there came a point when enough was enough, and Olivia had reached that point the day she opened the door and watched her mother walk out of her life. "How are you, Lenny?" she asked now, watching the only immediate family member she had left stare at the tombstone with a far-off look in her eyes. "I've been better." Alina fiddled with the diamond stud in her ear. She was perfectly put together, as always, in her sleek black Calvin Klein outfit and black Stuart Weitzman boots. But her complexion had lost its usual glow, and lines of tension bracketed her mouth. "I feel so stupid about Richard, about Mom, about everything." "You didn't know. I should have believed you when you first told me about Richard, but I wanted so bad for it not to be true." Alina's gaze dipped. "I'm sorry, Liv, about everything. You didn't have to come, especially when you're so busy with school. I've been a horrible sister." "Stop. I wanted to come. He was my father, too. And you're my sister, though I wanted to slap you quite a few times over the years," Olivia added with a small smirk. Alina narrowed her eyes. "I would have kicked your ass." Shock barreled into Olivia. Did you just say the word ass? The profanity-spewing Alina doppelganger shrugged. "Fuck it. My fiancé cheated on me. My broken engagement is splashed all over the papers. My father's dead and my mother's a bitch. I can say the word ass if I want to." A laugh bubbled out of Olivia's throat, and the pressure that had weighed on her chest for the past few months eased the tiniest bit. "Yes, you can. But no way could you kick my ass." Silence descended again, during which a light bulb went off in her head. "You never got a bachelorette weekend, did you?" "Thanks for rubbing it in," Alina said, looking miffed. She'd found Richard's burner phone before the event. "I have an idea." A grin spread across Olivia's face. 10 minutes later, after she'd explained her plan, Alina answered with a matching grin. "Let's do it." They glanced at Bruce's gravestone one last time, bidding farewell to the man they'd never known and never would, and closing another chapter of their lives before they walked to the car Olivia had rented at the airport. "You sure?" She typed a destination into the GPS and watched Alina for any signs of hesitation. All she saw was resolve. "Hell yeah." Alina slipped on her sunglasses. "Let's rock this bitch." Olivia laughed again, still unable to believe those words were coming out of her proper, uptight sister's mouth. She floored the gas, and they were off, speeding past dramatic desert landscapes and narrow slot canyons. The Tang sisters were going to Vegas.
Chapter 29. "Jesus, I am exhausted." Cordelia flopped onto the floor in a dramatic heap. "Why are so many people buying cupcakes on a random Wednesday?" "Don't complain." Bryce slouched against the counter and folded his arms over his chest. "I, for one, am happy it's crazy again. We don't want a repeat of late August." Cordelia shuddered.
"True."
Sammy cleared his throat, loudly. "Guys, I want you to meet someone." His front of house managers jerked their heads around and scrambled to their feet when they saw who stood next to him. "This is Jude." He gestured to the brown-haired man who surveyed the shop with sharp eyes and a faint glimmer of amusement. "Jude, this is Cordelia and Bryce. They run the front of the house." Nice to meet you. Bryce stuck out his hand, then flushed like he wasn't sure whether that was the right thing to do. Nice to meet you, too. Jude returned the handshake with an easy smile. You're right. We definitely don't want a repeat of late August.
You're the new CEO.
Cordelia gave him a once-over.
You're younger than I expected.
Trust Cordelia to speak her mind, even to new management. Jude laughed.
Thank you. But there's no need to flatter me with words. A cupcake will do just fine.
Surprise flitted across Cordelia's face before she grinned.
I like you, boss.
She paused.
I mean, boss too? What should I call you now?
She directed this question at Sammy like he'd have an answer.
Boss, boss one, or baking boss?
None of the above. Call me Sammy.
Boring,
he sighed. Good luck, he muttered under his breath to Jude, who laughed harder. The people here are great. I'm glad you brought me on. Me too. Trust me, you're a lifesaver. Sammy slapped his new CEO's back before he left him to get to know Cordelia and Bryce better. Jude had asked to introduce himself and speak to all the employees of Crumble and Bake personally, and the front of the house was the last stop since the bakery had just closed for the day. With the PR crisis behind him and business booming once again, Sammy had thrown himself headfirst into finding a CEO. After weeks of interviews, he'd lucked out with Jude, who was competent, approachable, detail-oriented, and experienced, all the things he needed in a chief executive. In his late 40s, Jude had worked in the food industry all his life, with his latest role being chief operating officer of a cult plant burger chain, which he left because of the workplace culture. He'd officially signed the papers last week, and today was his first day on the job. As Sammy had predicted, the staff already loved him.
Boss One? Cordelia angled her head toward the entrance to the shop. Think someone is looking for you?
Sammy followed her gaze, and the breath whooshed out of his lungs when he saw who stood on the other side of the now locked front door.
Hey, isn't that the...
Bryce started before Cordelia jabbed her elbow in his side. You guys talk. I'll be right back. Sammy forced himself to relax as he walked to the door and stepped into the warm midday sun. The usually bustling sidewalk was quiet in the lull between lunch and rush hour, and he noticed every sound around him. The quiet pounding of his heart, the jangling of bells as someone exited the shop next to his, the faint honk of a car horn in the distance. That's quite an outfit. Olivia blushed. She wore a black tee that bared her stomach and had a sparkly graphic of the famous Vegas sign stamped on the front, tiny denim shorts and Adidas. Giant palm tree earrings swung from her ears and gleamed gold beneath the sun.
I lost a bet with my sister, she grimaced. She told me to wear this to see you. She was drunk at the time, so her judgment may have been off.
His brows knit together. Alina? I didn't realize you two were drinking and making bets with each other now. Last he'd heard, the Tang sisters were on barely civil terms. Then again, he hadn't spoken with Olivia since Italy. It had killed him not to talk to or see her, but he'd kept his word and given her space to sort out whatever she needed to sort out.
It's a long story.
Olivia blinked up at him, looking so beautiful, even in that ridiculous outfit, that his heart hurt.
Can we talk? I have a lot to tell you.
He smiled, his heart glowing at being near her again. I thought you'd never ask. 2 hours and two coffees later, Sammy sat in a nearby cafe's leather booth digesting what Olivia had just told him. Her mother, her sister, her father, Jesus, her father. She'd lived a lifetime in the time they'd been apart.
I found out about him right before I left for Italy. Olivia swirled a finger over the tabletop, tracing an invisible pattern. For the first time in my life, I was so overwhelmed I couldn't think. The situation with us, my job, my family, plus the craziness of school and Chris's wedding, it was too much. I wasn't in the right place mentally or emotionally to jump into a relationship again, and it didn't seem fair to bring you into my mess. I didn't expect to be so affected by what happened with my parents, considering I wasn't close to either of them. I didn't even know my father. But I was. I couldn't talk about it because I didn't know how to talk about it. I'm still figuring it out. But the trip to Nevada brought some much-needed closure, and I'm in a better place now. Plus, I wanted to talk to you. To see you. Her voice softened. To thank you for waiting. You don't have to thank me. I said I would wait for as long as you needed, and I meant it. Sammy reached across the table and took one of her hands in his. Her cool palms warmed beneath his touch. For the record, you wouldn't have been stringing me along. I want to be there for you, even when you're a mess, especially when you're a mess. That's what a relationship is all about. Being there for each other through the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. If you don't want to talk about something, you don't have to talk about it. If you do want to talk about it, I'm here. Like I said, I love you. That'll never change. That was all there was to it. Love. Such a simple concept that humans liked to twist and complicate with their fears and insecurities. But eventually everyone had to make a choice. Let the doubt consume them, or let love carry them through. Olivia squeezed his hand back, and the glow in his chest burned brighter. "I have something else to tell you," she said. "I didn't want to say anything until it was official." He waited, his breath stuck somewhere between his lungs and throat. "I quit Pine Hill."
"What?"
The word exploded out of him.
"Liv, let me finish."
Her eyes glittered.
"I quit, and they hired me back. I agreed on the condition that I could date whoever I want unless it's a coworker. They have no say in my personal life as long as I don't do anything illegal or anything that conflicts with the business. You and I? Not a conflict. Not based on the flimsy reasoning they gave me about preventing image issues before they arise."
"How?" Sammy managed, still trying to sort through his shock.
"Leverage."
Olivia lifted her shoulder in a tiny shrug. "I applied to a bunch of other PE firms and got an offer that matched my current position and salary at PHC. It would have taken a few extra years to become VP, but I didn't care. I made sure they wouldn't care who I dated on my personal time before I put in my 2 weeks' notice with PHC. I swear I heard their eyes pop out of their head over the phone. I don't think they expected me to push back like that. They asked me to hold off on signing anything until they reviewed my case and came to a decision. But the real kicker was when Ty Winstock found out about my resignation through Kat, and he threatened to follow me to my new firm."
A wry smile.
"I suspect Kat had something to do with that decision. But Ty told PHC I was the reason he'd signed on in the first place, and he wouldn't stay if I wasn't there. The rest is history."
"So you and I are free to do whatever we want?" Olivia smiled, but her eyes were worried.
"What do you want, Sammy?"
He didn't have to think about it. "I want you." The worry disappeared, replaced with a sparkle that shone brighter than the stars.
"I was hoping you'd say that."
They sealed their promise with a kiss, a declaration to the world that they would be together no matter what. A kiss that had been a long time coming, that left them both gasping for breath and their waitress's face beat red when she cleared off their table. "I realized something," Sammy said as they walked toward his car, parked in front of his now dark bakery. He hadn't said goodbye to his staff, but he'd see them tomorrow. Maybe. He was tempted to take the rest of the week off and spend it in Olivia's arms instead. "About us?" She raised a questioning brow. "Our problem wasn't timing. It's self-martyrdom." He leaned against the passenger door. "You lied to your mother in New York to protect me. I pretended to be you and lied to your boss to protect you. You asked me to wait because you didn't want to string me along, and so on and so forth. Self-martyrdom." Olivia huffed out a laugh.
"When you put it like that, we've been idiots.
Kinda. But we also ended up here. So we're not total idiots. Sammy wrapped his arms around her waist and drew her close.
Here is good, she teased.
Here is very good. He dipped his head and they kissed again, long and slow and leisurely, ignoring the catcalls of passers-by as they got lost in a world where nothing existed except the two of them.
Chapter 30. 3 years later. Your 2 o'clock meeting got moved to 3. Your hairstyle is confirmed for Sunday. I made reservations for lunch with Ty Winstock at Avenue for Thursday. The mic for your Women on Wall Street podcast interview arrived this morning, and Lizzie paused for breath. You have a visitor. Olivia sent her email update about PHC's progress on the solar tech deal to the firm's partners and managing directors before glancing up. Details? She wasn't expecting any visitors today, but that had never stopped her friends from dropping in when they felt like it. Though she suspected their eagerness had more to do with the Chris Hemsworth-looking analyst who worked on her floor than it did with her. 5'6", head-to-toe Calvin Klein, incredibly scary before I got her caffeine fix. Olivia grinned. We're sisters for a reason. Don't I know it? Her assistant slash secretary slash all-around goddess gave an exaggerated shudder. I have one more message, though. Go on. Olivia already knew what it was. But her heart still fluttered like a schoolgirl when Lizzie handed her a cupcake and a note. Sammy sent her one every Monday. To start her week off on a good note, he said. Pun intended. They'd eloped 2 years ago and tied the knot in Lake Tahoe. Olivia had always pictured her wedding as a grand affair, had relished the thought of all the planning and spreadsheets she'd get to do in the run-up to her big day. But she hadn't been able to stop thinking about the vision Sammy had painted that night in Italy, of running off to the mountains, just the two of them. So that was what they did. They did host a small reception attended by their closest friends and family when they returned, mostly to prevent themselves from being murdered by said friends and family for not telling them about their nuptials beforehand. But Olivia's most cherished wedding memory would always be their tiny ceremony on a mountaintop. No fancy decorations, no long list of guests, no crazy wedding dress or elaborate choreography. Just her, Sammy, and the drumbeat of their love rolling through the crisp mountain air. That was all they'd needed. Aren't you going to open it? Lizzie asked. Nope. Olivia knew better. Most of the notes were sweet, but a few were downright filthy. The last time she read one in front of Lizzie, she started choking on air and turned so red Lizzie almost called 911. She got her revenge later that night. The handcuffs Tamara bought her as a gag gift one Christmas came in handy. But it was better not to alarm her assistant too much. Lizzie sighed. Fine, deprive me of my opportunity to live vicariously through you. You'll survive. Lizzie was in no way hurting for excitement. She'd once come back from vacation engaged to a duke, only to break off the engagement 2 weeks later when she found out he had a kid and estranged wife he'd failed to tell her about. Olivia walked into her sprawling office and draped her coat over the arm of the couch. How does it feel? She quipped. Alina spun one last time in her desk chair before standing up. Great. That's an excellent chair. Ergonomic, sturdy, comfortable. Adjusted to the perfect height. It better be. It cost $500. Olivia laughed and hugged her sister. What are you doing here? Don't tell me the clinic succeeded in wooing you after all. Alina had been close to signing a contract with the private San Francisco clinic that had wanted to hire her as their anesthesiologist 3 years ago. But a Chicago clinic had swept in and outbid them at the last minute. Not yet, Alina grinned. I was in L.A. for a conference and took a quick trip up to see my little sis. How's my niece or nephew doing? Olivia flinched. Shh. She closed the door to her office and peered out the window to see if anyone had overheard. The only person nearby was Lizzie, who was busy unboxing her podcast mic, People will hear. Why? What's the big... Oh, Alina's eyes grew round. You haven't told them yet. No. Olivia rested a hand on her stomach, her anxiety battling with joy and excitement. Her doctor had confirmed it a month earlier. She was pregnant. 8 weeks along, to be exact. She wasn't showing yet, but it was only a matter of time. Personally, Olivia was over the moon. Professionally, she was nervous as hell. As far as Wall Street firms went, PHC was pretty progressive, especially since it added a woman, finally, to its board of directors last year and promoted another to partner. But the stigma against pregnant women still existed in the industry, and Olivia had heard too many horror stories about expecting mothers who were treated poorly after they announced their pregnancy and demoted after they returned from maternity leave. Some of them got fired during maternity leave. Olivia knew she couldn't keep her pregnancy a secret forever, but she was dragging out the announcement until she could come up with a solid backup plan in case things went sideways. Do you really think they'll freak out? Alina asked. I don't know. Other than Michael, I'm the highest-ranking person in this office, so they won't say anything to my face, but I'm not sure what to expect from HQ. Olivia shook her head. I'll figure it out. She'd come a long way since her first summer in California. She was now a director at Pine Hill Capital, one step above the vice president, and one rung below Michael's managing directorship. He'd ceded most of the day-to-day management in the San Francisco office to her, and rumor had it he was planning to retire in the next few years, which would leave an MD spot open. Olivia already had her eyes set on it. She wasn't obsessed with becoming managing director the way she'd been obsessed with becoming vice president, but she still had goals. Her dreams of conquering Wall Street hadn't vanished just because she'd struck a healthier work-life balance. I'm sure you will, Alina's eyes twinkled. So, you have your first ultrasound today? Yes, Olivia narrowed her eyes. Is that why you came here? So you could tag along to the ultrasound? Her sister was the picture of innocence. I have no idea what you're talking about. Bullshit. You're as bad as Sammy's family. Olivia planted her hands on her hips. Do you know who's already coming with me to the sonogram besides Sammy? My mother, father, brother, and sister-in-laws, and my entire book club, plus a FaceTime call with Farah, Chris, and Courtney. I swear the sonographer's going to kick me out. Right. That means one more person won't make a difference, Alina said, ignoring the last part of Olivia's statement. It took time, but after she got out from under Eleanor's thumb, Alina had relaxed and blossomed into the warm, loving soul Olivia remembered from her early childhood. Alina and Eleanor still kept in touch, barely, but her sister no longer let their mother run her life, and it made all the difference. Alina was thriving at work, dating for fun instead of being laser-focused on finding the right husband. And she looked happier than Olivia had ever seen her. Olivia gave up on trying to dissuade her sister from joining her at the ultrasound appointment. Fine, meet me there, she grumbled with affection. I'll text you the address. Now, I need to get back to work so I can afford the mountain of diapers in my future. Alina hadn't left for more than a minute before Lizzie knocked and poked her head in. Michael wants to see you in the conference room. Olivia's brows furrowed. Do we have a client meeting? They only used the conference room for client and staff meetings, and they didn't have the latter scheduled for today. He didn't give any details, but he said it's urgent. All right, she sighed. She'd hoped for extra time to review her notes before her 3 o'clock meeting, but she guessed that wasn't happening. Luckily, she'd already done the bulk of the preparation yesterday. She followed Lizzie to the conference room. The office had emptied for lunch and... Surprise! Olivia's jaw unhinged when she saw her co-workers crowded around the large mahogany table, beaming. Michael, Cassidy, now a VP, Logan, who unfortunately still worked at PHC, but who'd toned down his snark given Olivia was now his boss, They were all there. Some wore party hats, others held balloons. A giant white, pink, and blue cake sat in the middle of the table, along with soda, chips, and assorted other snacks. Her heart picked up pace. How did they find out? She'd been so careful about hiding her pregnancy. But everyone looked happy, except for Logan, and they were throwing her a party, so maybe she'd agonized over the announcement for nothing. "Who told you?" she blurted. Her colleagues exchanged glances. "What?" Cassidy spoke for the rest of the group. "Who told you I was pregnant?" You could hear a pin drop. Michael's eyes widened while Cassidy's mouth fell open. A quick look around the room confirmed they weren't the only ones with that reaction. Dread slithered into Olivia's stomach at their obvious shock. Shit! They hadn't known. But then what was...
No one, Logan snorted,
quickly masking his smug satisfaction with a fake smile.
This was your belated surprise birthday party. We didn't celebrate a few weeks ago because of the Haldern Pacific deal, Michael explained.
Oh. Olivia didn't know what to say. Of all the ways she'd imagined announcing her pregnancy, dropping the bombshell by accident to her entire office hadn't been one of them. She might as well have hit reply all to an email with a photo of her sonogram. She let out a nervous laugh. Well, surprise, I'm pregnant. Fuck it, the secret was already out. Time to embrace it and take the consequences as they came. More silence. Cassidy was the first to break it. She ran around the table and hugged Olivia. She'd grown a lot better at showing physical affection over the years. Congratulations, that's amazing. The dam broke. And Olivia was soon inundated with more hugs and congratulations. They all looked genuine, except for Logan, who sulked in the corner. And Olivia gradually relaxed. This wasn't so bad. Michael was the last to approach her. After some small talk, he said,
You may already know this, but we updated our parental leave policy last year. More paid time off, plus flexible work arrangements after you return to the office. Take advantage of them. You're only a new parent once.
Thank you, Olivia said with a touch of wariness. She examined her boss's face for any signs he was upset about her pregnancy. But she couldn't find anything amiss.
I mean it. Don't be afraid to use all those benefits. It won't affect your career trajectory here.
Michael cleared his throat.
There's a... stigma against expecting parents in certain parts of our industry. But PHC has always prided itself on being forward-thinking and inclusive.
Olivia guessed the greater female representation on the board and roster of partners helped, too. I appreciate that, she said. I'll definitely keep it in mind.
Please do. My daughter works in finance, too, Michael added. Hedge fund. Refused to take my advice and go into private equity, but what can you do? I know how hard it was for her when she started out. It's still hard, even though she's a senior executive now. But you take it one day at a time.
Olivia murmured her agreement. In an ideal world, Michael would promote female-friendly work policies even if his daughter didn't work in finance. But she'd take her wins where she could find them. The rest of the day passed in a blur. And soon, she was in an Uber on her way to her first ultrasound appointment. Olivia unfolded the note Lizzie had handed her earlier and frowned. Was that a recipe? It took her a minute to realize it wasn't just any recipe. It was the recipe for Wah-Sing's shrimp dumplings. The ones she'd always wanted but had never been able to get. Sammy had scrawled a short note at the bottom of the page.
I love you and dim sum.
A play on the phrase, I love you and then some. The man loved his food puns, as evidenced by the growing collection of food pun prints in their kitchen. Olivia burst into laughter, ignoring the strange look her driver shot her in the rearview mirror. God, she loved her husband.
Is this everyone, or will more people be joining us?
The stenographer, who'd introduced herself as Micah, raised her eyebrows at the dozen people crammed inside the room.
This is it. Amy waved an impatient hand in the air. So, do I have a grandson or granddaughter? Do I have a godson or goddaughter?
Farah asked at the same time, leaning forward like she could somehow see better, even though she was watching through a screen instead of in person. Sammy adjusted the phone so Farah, Courtney, and Chris could get a clearer view of Olivia. Micah laughed.
I'm afraid it's too early for that.
A collective sigh of disappointment.
But we should have that information at the second routine scan if the mother would like to know the gender ahead of time.
Trust me, she does, Chris said. She was sitting in what looked like her bedroom.
Liv loves planning for stuff.
Everyone laughed, because it was true.
It never hurts to be prepared,
Olivia said primly, eliciting another round of laughter. Then the technician got to work, and Olivia gripped Sammy's hand, waiting with bated breath while Micah spread gel over her abdomen and moved the ultrasound device over her stomach until she found what she was looking for. An image flickered onto the screen, and everyone gasped. Olivia's and Sammy's grips tightened on each other at the same time.
No way.
She couldn't breathe. Her heart was pounding. Pounding so loud she might go deaf from it.
Is that?
Yes, Micah smiled, her eyes twinkling.
Everything looks fine, and you're having twins.
The room erupted into cheers and laughs. Sammy's mother was so excited she swooned. Her husband and Kevin caught her just in time. And Olivia swore she saw Alina dab tears from her eyes.
Two for the price of one,
Natalie crowed, earning herself several glares.
What? We all know Liv wanted twins.
We're having twins. Olivia couldn't believe it.
We're having twins.
Sammy kissed her, hard and fast. Either his eyes were teary or hers were. Probably both. It didn't matter.
They were having twins.
It's in your 5-year plan. The universe wouldn't dare mess it up, he joked.
But he sounded choked up. Olivia laughed. Final test is when we find out the gender. Fingers crossed for a girl and a boy. Even as she said it, she knew she didn't care. Two girls, two boys, one girl and one boy, she'd love them regardless. While their friends and family chattered away in excitement, she asked the question she'd been dying to ask since they arrived.
How did you get that recipe?
Sammy's eyes crinkled at the corner.
A man has to keep some secrets.
Seriously, I'm pregnant and hormonal. You don't want to mess with me.
His shoulders shook with laughter.
Let's make a deal. I'll tell you if you can make those dumplings from scratch and they taste similar to Wasing's. And if we don't get food poisoning, he added.
Olivia scowled. You've a death wish, Mr. Yu.
Good thing you love me so much, Mrs. Yu.
He brushed his lips over hers again.
Otherwise, I'd be concerned.
She grumbled and pretended to be upset. But in reality, Olivia had never been happier, even if her husband insisted on making fun of her kitchen skills.
Like, geez, the food poisoning thing had happened over a decade ago. Let it go.
And yeah, she might have almost set the kitchen on fire last month, but that wasn't her fault. Some things just happened to be extremely flammable.
Olivia rested her hand over her stomach, her heart already bursting with love for the newest members of their family.
And as she looked around at all the people she called family, both by blood and by choice, she realized she'd finally found home.
Epilogue. 4 years later.
My babies!
Farah bent low and opened her arms.
Look how big you've gotten. I can't believe it.
Lily and Aiden peeled themselves away from Olivia and toddled toward their godmother with delighted squeals. Farah smothered them with hugs and kisses while Olivia looked on with an indulgent smile.
I see how it is, Olivia said with faux anger. The minute Aunt Farah arrives, you forget all about your mom, huh? Lily peeked back at Olivia shyly.
Love you, Mommy.
Olivia's heart melted. Love you too, sweetie. She blew her daughter a kiss, which Lily returned. Meanwhile, Aiden was too busy searching for presents on Farah's person to join the love fest.
They're only excited to see me because I always come bearing gifts.
Farah fished two gaily wrapped boxes out of her bag.
No, sweetie, not now. We have to wait until tomorrow or your mom will get upset.
Aww. Aiden and Lily slumped in disappointment at the same time.
But Everett's out back if you want.
Farah didn't get all the words out before Aiden and Lily flew out of the room as fast as their little three-year-old legs would allow.
Play with him, she finished.
She set the gifts beneath the Christmas tree. Now you know how it feels to get ditched, Olivia teased.
Yeah, rub it in.
They stared at each other for a second before they squealed and hugged like two teenage girls reuniting after a summer apart.
It's so good to see you. Olivia squeezed her best friend tight. I thought you didn't get in until 5.
Our flight landed early. We would have arrived sooner, except Blake insisted on stopping for In-N-Out first. Farah rolled her eyes.
I swear he practically lives there every time we visit.
In-N-Out is good. Olivia linked her arm through Farah's and guided her out back, where the rest of the guests gathered around the fire pit. Sammy will be pissed he spoiled dinner, though.
Trust me, he didn't. The man eats like a horse.
Are you talking about me?
Blake drawled when they stepped through the sliding glass door and into the crisp December air. Olivia and Sammy had moved into a bigger house after she gave birth to the twins, with a proper backyard for Lily, Aiden, and their friends to run around and play in. No one had been surprised when a second ultrasound confirmed her twins comprised of one boy and one girl.
Like I said, the universe wouldn't dare give you anything else,
Sammy joked after the reveal. And as Michael had promised, Olivia's maternity leave hadn't affected her standing at PHC, where she was now a managing director. She'd filled Michael's position after he retired 2 years ago. Sure, she'd received some side eyes and passive-aggressive comments while she'd been pregnant, mostly from Logan, who'd finally been fired after another female employee filed a sexual harassment complaint against him. But there would always be assholes. Plus, she was now their boss, so tink that.
How did you know? I swear you have supersonic hearing, Farah grumbled.
I always know when I'm on your mind, babe.
Blake dropped a kiss on top of her head before he hugged Olivia.
Always good to see you, Liv.
Same.
She tapped his bicep in warning. It'll continue being good as long as you treat my girl right.
She cries, I'll whoop your ass.
Blake's dimples flashed.
A decade and a kid later and you still don't trust me?
Hell no, not with those baby blues and that drawl.
Olivia narrowed her eyes. I'm on to you, Blake Ryan.
You break my heart, Liv.
I'm sure.
Olivia looked at Farah while pointing at Blake.
Watch out for this one.
She was joking. For the most part. Blake and Farah had a rock-solid marriage, not to mention an adorable 5-year-old son named Everett. But Olivia would always be protective of her friends, no matter how old they were. Still, she had to admit she was in a good place. They all were. Olivia's chest glowed with warmth as she took in the scene before her. Everett was playing tag with the rest of the kids, including Lily, Aiden, and Ruby. Chris and Nate's daughter. Ruby was the same age as Lily and Aiden. Olivia and Chris had given birth 2 months apart. Ruby's parents were at the fire pit, talking and laughing with Courtney and her husband, Justin. Justin used to work at the New York branch of Blake's Bar Legends before he opened his own tattoo parlor. He and Courtney got together when, by chance, they'd gotten stuck in the same B&B during a freak snowstorm. They tied the knot last year. Nardo, Luke, and Leo Agnelli, another friend from study abroad, were arguing over some movie that'd released last week. Well, Nardo and Leo were arguing. Luke was busy stuffing his face with chips. Olivia was surprised Leo had shown up. She invited him every year, but the famous writer was usually in Europe, where he was based. Other than an abundance of facial hair and a few wrinkles around his eyes, he looked exactly the same. Olivia remained an active member of the Erotica Book Club, which had gained several members over the years. But tonight, only the originals were here. Kat, Tamara, Natalie, and Donna, plus their significant others, including Jessica, Tamara's now wife, and Ty. Kat and Ty weren't engaged yet, but Olivia suspected that would be on the horizon soon. At least, Kat's ex was way behind her in the rearview mirror. Ben, who? And of course, there was Sammy. He was manning the grill with Aaron and Trey, looking sexy as hell, per usual. He caught her eye and winked, and her heart melted into a gooey puddle. She blew him a kiss. He grinned and waggled his eyebrows. Translation, wait until I get you alone after our guests leave and our children go to bed. Olivia's skin heated at the promise.
You say Blake and I are gross.
Farrah wrinkled her nose. I think you and Sammy win that award.
Please, at least you didn't have to watch us defile a Vegas hotel room couch.
Farrah's complexion went from golden to crimson in less than 1 second.
We thought the door adjoining our suites was locked.
She narrowed her eyes.
How long were you guys watching?
Not that long. We're not voyeurs. We were just in shock. Olivia cleared her throat.
Anyway, the food is ready.
Wait, Alina?
The corners of Olivia's mouth turned down. She can't make it. There's a big snowstorm and all flights are grounded until tomorrow.
Huh. Then she must have a twin I don't know about because she's right there.
Olivia whirled around, taking in the green-clad figure stepping through the kitchen's sliding glass door.
What? I thought you were stuck in Chicago,
she cried, throwing her arms around her sister, while Farrah slipped off to grab what looked like a broken plastic toy from Everett before he put it in his mouth. Olivia swore children bit into everything. She'd initially freaked out. She still did, sometimes, depending on what the object was, because, hello, talk about unhygienic. But Sammy had forced her to do meditation exercises until she calmed down. If she had children and couldn't handle a little dirt and mess, she was in for a rough few years / decades. Point taken. But Olivia drew the line at letting Lily and Aiden touch strange objects in strange places. That was how people died. Alina grinned and hugged her back.
I thought I was. But there was one flight out before they closed the airport, and I managed to grab a seat. I had to transfer in Phoenix, though, which is why I'm late. Did you already start?
Not yet. You have perfect timing. Olivia and Alina squished into the circle ringing the fire pit, while Sammy, Trey, and Aaron passed out plates of food. Since it was December, they'd stuck with grilling winter foods. Pulled pork, sweet potato and chicken kebabs, butternut squash, pineapple, to remind them of warmer times, and bacon-wrapped corn on the cob.
This smells delicious,
Olivia pecked Sammy on the lips before he took the seat next to her and draped an arm over her shoulder.
Thanks for cooking.
Trey cleared his throat, loudly.
You too, Trey, she said wryly. And Aaron, I appreciate it.
Anytime, Trey puffed out his chest. I've become quite a master griller over the years.
Olivia had hosted this annual pre-Christmas party for 3 years now, and it was the highlight of the year. However, this was the first year that everyone made it. They were usually so busy that it was hard to find a date that worked for the entire group, especially since half of them lived in different cities.
Sure, Aaron patted Trey on the back. You've really honed your plating skills. Fuck you, dude. Language,
every parent within earshot shouted. Trey rolled his eyes. He was 35, still a bachelor, and proud of it.
Chill the F out. The munchkins can't hear me. If my daughter starts cursing, I'll kick your... Oh, Fanny,
Nate warned, adjusting the end of his sentence, when Ruby ran over with something cupped in her hands.
Hey, sweetheart, what do you have?
Oh, shit. I mean, fuck. I mean, what is that?
Olivia pressed her lips together while Sammy buried his face in her neck, his shoulders shaking. Ruby held up the decapitated doll's head with a toothy smile.
Barbie.
Okay, but Chris looked like she was trying not to laugh at Nate's freaked out expression. Where's the rest of Barbie, honey? Ruby shrugged.
Oh, look.
She dumped the head in Nate's hand and ran back to the other children, who were rooting in the ground for God knows what.
Psst, Chris.
Luke lowered his voice to a stage whisper. I think your daughter's a budding serial killer. Chris leveled him with a cool glare. Looking impeccable as always in a Prada sweater and rag-and-bone skinny jeans tucked into a pair of snakeskin boots that probably cost more than the average American's monthly rent.
Psst, Luke,
she matched his stage whisper. Why don't you shove your corncob up your ass? Pent-up laughter swept through the crowd, both at Luke's offended expression and the way Nate Reynolds, famous for playing some of the big screen's toughest, most macho action heroes, held the doll's head away from him like it would suck his soul out if it got too close.
Oh, so everyone's cursing now, but I'm the one who gets yelled for it?
Trey shook his head.
Bullshit. Technically, doll decapitation is not a proven sign of a serial killer in the making,
Nardo said, adjusting his glasses.
More reliable indicators include torturing small animals, arson, voyeurism, antisocial behavior.
Can we not talk about this at a holiday party with children? Olivia planted her hands on her hips. I want tonight to be perfect. Why don't we share? She stopped as something flew in front of her and landed in the fire pit.
Leo peered at it. Is that?
Yes. Olivia pressed two fingers to her temple as a loud wail ripped through the air. Yes, it is. Ruby had apparently found the rest of Barbie's body, but tripped on her way back to her parents. The doll had gone flying out of her hands and was now dying a slow death in the fire while Nate and Chris consoled their distraught daughter. Well, Nate consoled. Chris was busy snapping at Luke, who kept muttering, "See, arson," under his breath.
That's not arson, you idiot, Chris said. What do you have against Ruby?
Nothing. All I'm saying is arson, fire, kind of the same thing. No, it's not,
Nardo interjected.
Arson is by definition the willful or malicious burning of property, according to Merriam-Webster. It smells like plastic,
Leo glanced at Olivia.
Do you have any Febreze lying around?
Ronnie, no!
Donna yelled at her son, who was smearing barbecue sauce all over Lily and Aiden's brand new white Ralph Lauren shirts.
What did I tell you about? Stop, or no YouTube for a week.
This is making me question our decision to adopt.
Tamara popped a pineapple slice into her mouth.
I mean, we already have a dog. Do we really need a kid?
What? We don't have a dog.
Jessica's frown melted when Tamara froze.
Wait, did you get us a dog for Christmas? Oh my God.
Fuck,
Tamara groaned. But a smile escaped when Jessica peppered her with questions about the breed.
Language,
Nate roared, waving the doll's head in the air while he kept his other arm around a sobbing Ruby.
Is it a husky? A golden retriever? A Labrador? I swear, Ronnie, if you don't listen to me and stop right now, it'll be 2 weeks without YouTube or TV.
That's not what arson means.
You're the serial killer.
Bite me.
Who ate all the bacon off the cobs and left the corn?
Yo, does anyone know the score for the game tonight?
Shut up. You shut up. Screw you. Language.
Olivia collapsed in her seat and buried her face in her hands. One. I just want one holiday party where things don't go off the rails, she said, her voice muffled. Sammy chuckled and drew her close.
Where would be the fun in that? This is the most entertaining party I've ever been to.
Agreed. Alina nodded and stuck a piece of bacon into her mouth while casting a guilty look at Blake, who was staring at the pile of naked corn cobs near the grill with an outraged expression.
I'm so glad I made it.
Gee, thanks, Olivia sighed, while the noise around her reached a crescendo. All I'm saying is,
Mommy!
Aiden tackled her with a hug and smeared barbecue sauce all over Olivia's hair, face, and clothing.
Look!
He held up an empty corn on the cob with a toothy grin.
I eat this all by myself.
Sammy snorted out a laugh. Olivia's eyes narrowed as vengeance brewed in her mind.
That's wonderful, sweetie. Why don't you go show Daddy? In fact, go give him a big hug.
Alarm skittered into Sammy's gaze a second before Aiden did as he was told and climbed into his father's lap. All right, all right. Sammy laughed and smacked a kiss on Aiden's cheek. Look at you. You're practically a grown-up now, aren't you?
Yep,
Aiden beamed. Lily, not wanting to be left out, attached herself to Olivia, who resigned herself to another giant laundry day tomorrow.
Wait, stop. That's so cute.
Farah pulled out her phone and snapped a picture of Olivia, Sammy, Lily, and Aiden. I sense a Christmas card in the making. You should send it to Mother. She'll have a heart attack, Alina said mischievously. Olivia snorted. Right. She hadn't spoken to Eleanor since the twins were born. When Olivia had called her out of courtesy and informed her she was now a grandmother, Eleanor had thanked her for the news and promptly hung up. If she hadn't grown up with a woman, Olivia would have never believed that someone could be so cold. But she put nothing past Eleanor Tang. She and her mother were basically estranged. And although a part of her would always mourn the maternal bond she'd never had, she'd come to terms with the fact that she and Eleanor would never see eye to eye. Sad though it may be, part of her was glad Eleanor wasn't in Lily and Aiden's lives. God knew she'd messed Olivia and Alina up enough. She didn't need the opportunity to do it to a new generation, too. According to Alina, Eleanor was dating some guy who owned half the car dealerships in Chicago and was on her way to gaining husband number 4. Olivia didn't care either way. She'd rather focus her energy on the people she loved and who loved her back. Besides, her children already had grandparents who adored them to pieces. Amy and Richard, who babysat whenever Olivia and Sammy needed a date night, snuck the twins candy behind their parents' backs, and played games with Lily and Aiden for hours without tiring, as long as said games didn't require too much physical activity. The Yus had welcomed Olivia into the fold as one of their own, even before she married Sammy. And they were the giant, loving family she'd never had. She adored them. Well, except for Edison. But he'd been excommunicated after he tried to bring down Sammy's business, so he didn't count. Next year, maybe we should nix the white clothes. Sammy gently pried Aiden's sticky fingers out of his hair while his son scrambled all over him like he was a jungle gym. Good idea, Olivia laughed. But soon she forgot all about the sauce and dirty clothes as she lost herself in the magic of the warmth and laughter around her. Later that night, after their guests had left and they'd tucked their children into bed, Sammy and Olivia curled up on the couch in front of the living room fireplace, drowsy but content. They didn't get a lot of alone time these days, so they made every second count when they did. You promised, Olivia said. Spill it, mister. He shot her a mock scowl. I'm convinced you cheated. I did no such thing. Her mischievous smile lit up her face. And he couldn't get over the fact that this beautiful, smart, amazing woman was his. How did he get so lucky? I practiced a lot, but I did it. Yeah, after 4 years. You didn't give me a time frame. She nudged his leg. Come on, how'd you get the recipe? That morning, before Sammy started prepping for tonight's party, Olivia had unveiled her surprise. Shrimp dumplings she'd made from scratch. They tasted fresh, and Wasing hadn't been open that early, so it couldn't have been takeout. Plus, they didn't taste exactly like Wasing's, but they were close. Fine, I'll tell you. But you can't get mad. Olivia's eyes narrowed. What did you do? I played the my wife is pregnant card. And I told Wasing's owner we'd name our daughter after her, if we had a daughter. Turns out the owner is quite susceptible to flattery.
What? Lily
was already on your list of names you liked, Sammy said quickly. That was a top secret recipe, okay? and you wouldn't stop talking about it.
What if her name hadn't been on my list? Olivia demanded. What if her name was, I don't know, Helgarda or something?
No one is named Helgarda.
I bet a Google search would prove you wrong.
He laughed. Hey, it all worked out. I wouldn't have made that offer if the owner's name had been hideous. Plus, I doubt she would have held us to it.
No wonder she always gives Lily an extra egg tart, Olivia muttered. She shoved his chest. Just for that, you're doing laundry tomorrow.
Fine. Sammy slid a palm up her thigh, smiling when he heard her breath hitch. Look on the bright side. You learned how to make your favorite dumplings. Our daughter has a beautiful name, and I'll have to work extra hard to make it up to you.
Which he did. For hours. On an apology tour that took them from the living room to the kitchen to the bedroom, where they finally collapsed, exhausted and content, on the bed. We have to wake up early tomorrow, Olivia sighed, snuggling closer to him. We still have to finish cleaning up the backyard. I bet there's stuff we missed tonight. It was so dark by the time everyone left.
I'll help.
Tomorrow was a work day, but Sammy had taken the week off. Jude ran a tight ship as Crumble and Bake's CEO, and Liam had taken on increasingly more responsibilities while Sammy stepped back to spend more time with his family. He still loved the bakery, but it was no longer dependent on him, and that was the way it should be. Crumble and Bake had only become more successful over the years after it opened its East Coast locations, which were huge hits, and added a full drinks menu to its offerings, much to Cordelia's delight. A rising star on San Francisco's theater scene, she was no longer with the company, but she visited often. They'd even named a latte after her.
We might have to clean this up tomorrow, too.
Sammy glanced around his and Olivia's room, wincing at the sight of the clothes strewn everywhere, the bottles they'd knocked over while they'd gone at it against the dressing table, and the dirt they'd tracked onto the floors.
This is a mess.
Olivia had relaxed over the years when it came to cleaning and organization. They had kids, after all. But Sammy still tried his best to keep everything neat when possible. Olivia rolled them over until she hovered over him. No, she said, drawing him in for a deep, luscious kiss that had him primed and ready to go for round four. Her eyes were warm and sparkled with love as she stared down at him. This isn't a mess. This is perfect. This concludes If We Were Perfect by Anna Huang, narrated by Cindy Kay and Aiden Snow. Copyright 2020 by Anna Huang. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Anna Huang, care of Brower Literary and Management, and was produced in the year 2022 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.